I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
We don't need no education. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness have given way to permanent crisis management, to policing the planet, fighting preventative wars of ideological containment, usually on terrain chosen by and favorable to our enemies. Limited government and constitutional accountability have been shouldered aside by the kind of imperial presidency our constitutional system was explicitly designed to prevent. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America. Jeffrey Bennett here, live on this sixth day of June. The day of infamy, as if there ever was one. For our fathers and grandfathers, in many cases. It's the first time I've been live on a Monday for quite some time, because I'm angry. Yes, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore, and neither should you. I just cannot believe that we are seeing so many, even within the Republican Party, now so willing to betray America by suppressing the Second Amendment in any form or fashion. If they can do this, essentially we have become a nation whereby our rights have been reduced to privileges to be granted or squashed at the arbitrary whim of men and women holding power in seats of government. This was warned by Ronald Reagan so many years ago. With each victory, no matter how small, in their fight to weaken the Second Amendment, the Democratic Party communists take us one more step into the dark abyss where mass murder and tyranny awaits us all. unless we submit and acquiesce to become the serfs of the authoritarian socialist state. Regardless of what happens on this front, win or lose, all free, bored American men and women still must understand that their right to keep and bear arms is more than just some scribbling in the Bill of Rights. It is a right that they, that we hold, no matter how embattled or suppressed it may become under any government on any given day. And in order to stay free, there are times it must be utilized, watering the tree of liberty with the blood of patriots and tyrants. My friends, in a perfect world, evil would not exist. No one would ever be murdered in so abhorrent, horrific manners as we regularly witness. Life would be wonderful and rosy, and everyone would love one another. But the world we have is far from perfect. And people die every day, sometimes in the most horrible ways that make one shudder. We cannot let our fear of death move us to make our world so safe and secure that we relinquish and abandon every last vestige of our freedom and individual liberty. But unfortunately, Joey is urging Congress to pass legislation to ban assault weapons, and I use that term loosely, with quotes. High-capacity magazines. And they all want to move to impose universal background checks and red flag laws, as if the 20 million owners of AR-style rifles are all running around causing mayhem and murder. Despite his new assertion that he would not seek a ban on handguns, his past statements, especially regarding the 9mm and high-capacity weapons, reveal where his mind really is on the issue of gun control. He and all his criminal cronies would confiscate every single firearm in America if they could. Which is interesting. If we look back in history at her Joey, in 1985, when he was merely a senator, stated that criminals will get guns with or without gun control laws. Does he think all of that has changed? Think about the reference to 9mm. Because targeting 9mm ammunition is nothing less than targeting all handguns in the Second Amendment, since it is one of the most popular calibers in the country that is quite effective for self-defense purposes. And yet, while deadly 9mm firearms don't blow the lungs out, as recently ignorantly suggested by Biden, and incredulously, on May the 26th, just a week or so ago, the weak-kneed Senate Majority Leader Bitch McConnell couldn't wait to rush to get bipartisan gun control measures under negotiation with the demon craps. He told Rhino Senator John Cronin that he should seek talks with Democrats such as Senator Chris Murphy to attempt to compromise on legislation for greater gun control. All, of course, in a knee-jerk response to the horrific mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. And in the meantime, New York Rhino Chris Jacobs now says he will support a ban on all AR-15 assault weapons. Of course, then up Chucky Schumer and White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, loser Beto O'Rourke, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, they've all have rolled in the floor in wild laughter, crapping their pants when they heard this anti-American, anti-liberty BS coming from the Republican opposition. And where they're always represented as assault weapons when they're just easily identifiable as weapons for self-defense. Why do they do that? Word games, my friends. You see, each time a mass shooting happens, those who seek power immediately focus on new and improved ways to infringe on our inalienable God-given right to keep and bear arms, to erode it, to end it, rather than focusing on the murderer who committed the heinous crime. And the word compromise is used by modern-day republic rats, almost always uses surrender. 2010, America suffered 19,392 suicides, 11,078 murders by people wielding firearms, and unfortunately, the numbers have increased over the years, sometimes hitting between 20 and 50,000. In 2020, there were 19,384 murders with a firearm. Of course, there were also 24,292 suicides using a firearm. But as terrible as any loss of life is, this really is a very small percentage of the overall population of nearly 335 million people. We certainly didn't see this hard of a push for a national ban on all firearms and even 9mm ammunition as January 2022 in New York, L.A., Chicago, and Houston saw a total of 120 murders. You see, the majority of our population are law-abiding citizens who carry firearms in a responsible manner for their own self-defense. The criminals and the psychopaths do not care what the law may be, and so any forthcoming illegitimate, unconstitutional law that attempts to erode or suppress yours and my rights to keep and bear arms only hurts the good and the decent law-abiding Americans by placing us at risk in a society where only the criminals and law enforcement have firearms. I don't know about anyone else, but I'm mighty damn reluctant to relinquish my firearms when I know that policemen have never come to my aid. Not the first time. Whenever I've needed one in the past, I'm actually in the camp that says you can have them when you pry them from my cold, dead hands. Are we really going to place our lives in the hands of government agents and law enforcement who have already shown that they will not rescue us or save us from a mass shooter? Whether we look at the Las Vegas shooting or Uvalde. And we already witnessed the Democratic Party communists telling police to stand down so their supporters could loot and burn and create havoc in our cities for political purposes. You know, I just can't get the thoughts out of my head of how our federal government has too often sought to abuse us. Even with our arms rights intact and in place in the Constitution and elsewhere in the legal code. We just recently witnessed the Biden regime attempt to mandate masks and vaccines and force critical race theory on all America, even as he and they now attempt to further destroy America through the insane Green New Deal of the Democratic Party communists, all by way of a war on fossil fuel. Just imagine what Joey and his brown shirts and commie apparatchiks would do if our right to keep and bear arms wasn't in writing in the Constitution and several Supreme Court rulings of late. But now we're supposed to rely solely on them to defend us? Whoever thinks this is proper and good has lost their damn mind. Any Republican who sees our Second Amendment is negotiable and helps the Democratic commies weaken and erode it are also my enemy and an enemy to America. And the anger and the anguish of all Americans who have lost loved ones due to firearms violence is understandable, but we must not let our passion and feelings overcome sound logic and critical analysis to violate the right of self-defense of all Americans and our individual liberty. Feelings and heartbreak must not be our guidance for banning semi-automatic rifles, simply because they resemble with high-capacity magazines. Because whether or not the psychopaths among us use cars, planes, knives, axes, or hammers, murderers will always find something to use as a weapon. as seen across America's history. Criminals already don't obey laws against murder and felons owning firearms. They don't go through background checks. So someone needs to explain to us, logical thinkers, how new laws will make us safer. Come on. Explain how giving up our semi-automatic rifles, if you happen to own any, will make any safer. Long before Charles Whitman opened fire from the Bell Tower at the University of Texas at Austin and killed 14 people, America saw a disgruntled teacher detonate over 500 pounds of TNT at the Bath Consolidated School on May the 18th, 1927 in Bath, Michigan, killing 44 people. And let's not forget the 1886 Haymarket Square bombing in Chicago that killed 8, and the 1920 Manhattan bombing that killed 30 people. Of course, then we've got idiot journalists such as Judith Miller, who suggests that something is right or should be followed because of precedent or someone else is having done it. In part, she noted people left their guns outside Dodge City in the Old West days, failing to note that outlaws didn't. As she also held up New Zealand and Australia as examples that America should follow, even though those governments revealed themselves to be largely tyrannical without respect for anyone's God-given rights during the COVID outbreak. Miller recently told Arthur Neville and Fox News viewers that we lose 15,000 people a year through gun deaths, but many more deaths could be prevented with sensible gun control legislation. If New Zealand and Australia can do it after their mass shootings, why can't we? Well, former President Trump may have misjudged the mood of the nation on this one. I think of the very fact that he chose to speak at the NRA at this point in time last week, so soon after the shooting, really indicates that he doesn't really have his hand on the pulse of the nation. The people. Yeah, people are outraged. I mean, if it was one of their children, the senators, the congressmen, would they not take a different position? Does it actually have to hit home before people say it doesn't matter? Americans, Republicans, and Democrats overwhelmingly support sensible gun legislation. See, my friends, history is replete with countries that give up their arms, from Nazi Germany to China and Russia, onto Cuba, North Korea, Cambodia, only to experience some of the most incredibly violent and horrific genocides ever seen in human history to be perpetrated by those evil men and women in the seats of power. The very sort of thing that the Democratic Party and Joe Biden would visit upon America, as most of us already recognize them as the progenitors of the depopulation movement within the country and the willing accomplices with the Davos Great Reset crowd that mean to end U.S. sovereignty and power in the world scene by any means necessary. You see, when a person speaks of sensible gun legislation in the same context of limiting the Second Amendment, they show the depth and the scope of their ignorance, since that is the one amendment that has absolutely no qualifier placed upon it to say that you may keep and bear arms if you do this or that one thing first. Now, even if the fascists and the communists of the country succeeded in repealing it, as some have suggested doing, the Second Amendment, my friends, is based upon an inalienable God-given right. And just because they're willing to abandon their right doesn't give them any authority or right to suppress another person's right to keep and bear arms against their will by way of any majority vote and the passage of an illegitimate law. In 2012, there were 259 justifiable homicides committed by ordinary Americans fighting for their homes, their property, and their lives against criminals. You know, Americans use guns in an extremely disproportionate number of cases to stop crimes rather than commit them. And all Americans should be asking why we don't hear more of these facts reported by the mainstream media. The truth remains that guns are used 10 times more for good purposes by upstanding, good, and decent Americans to stop evil men and women and their horrific deeds that they intend to inflict upon some innocent. You know, it would rip my heart from my chest if one of my granddaughters, heaven forbid, were ever gunned down in some mass shooting. However, the chances of this happening to anyone in America are actually extremely low. Of course, this isn't any small comfort for those who have already lost their loved ones to such a tragedy, but still, I would not seek to take firearms from the hands of decent Americans and place millions in danger from greater violence and tyranny in the future from a newly emboldened and expanded criminal class and our own out-of-control federal government that currently seems a whole lot less interested in preserving our freedom and individual liberty than it is in growing its own wealth and power. No, my friends, the Democratic Party commies have fantasized about the moment they would end the Second Amendment in America and have a monopoly on the guns and the violence from the first days that any of them and their predecessors first read the writings of Karl Marx and later Mao Zedong. And this isn't the time for any defenders of our republic, America, and the principles of freedom to weaken in their resolve to keep every tool available in our arsenal for the purpose of keeping America and all her people free. Yeah. Even when I have to share commentary like this with you and make the kind of comments that I've made in this last 20-odd minutes, I get mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this. And so I submit to each and every one of you, stand firm, stand strong, and stand fast for God, life, family, country, freedom, and liberty. Commentary, Justin O. Smith. I thank you, my brother. What has been interesting, this is not the article, only article of its type that we have published at Federal Observer over the course of the last week. A new writer that we introduced to you some weeks ago, Gonzalez, has a new column entitled How the Anti-Gun Conspirators Miscalculated. It's appalling. Al Benson, the name of the game is confiscation. Remember the words of Adolf Hitler. To conquer a nation, first disarm its citizens. Over at Tina Tune. If someone is trying to disarm you, that means they consider you an enemy. We are the enemy? That's simply appalling. Simply appalling. Now, bear with me just a quick second. I've got to turn something off before sound overtakes me here. Michael, I can promise you there ain't going to be no time for break today. I'm going to need you to give me a time factor on this. And hang on just a quick second here. I can't even think. Here we go. That should do it. This is Monday, and as I mentioned, I've not been on the air live Monday for quite some months. I'm going to actually do something and talk for just a moment. If we start taking a look at some of our websites, there's a lot of new stuff that have been published at Federal Observer the last few days. Quite an amazing piece that I grabbed onto about a month ago, and I forgot, and I lost it, and I found it again, called In Memoriam, Baby Girl Number One. J.D. Hayworth's latest piece, Disagreement, now discredited as disinformation. There's a lot more. Very interesting piece called The Great Reset, Will You Submit or Stop It? These are the kind of questions that continue to go on. I mean, we could come up and talk about the gun confiscation. Will we submit or will we stop it? A very interesting piece that comes from a publication that I don't normally draw from. But it's got a real mixed bag thing, a far more interesting piece than I expected it to be, called What the End of Roe v. Wade Will Mean for the Next Generation of Obstetricians. Some of these subjects may be of interest to you. They should be. Yeah. Take a look at some of this stuff. FederalObserver.com. Another piece in the post-Uvalde school, a piece about the murders there. Entitled, The Story Continues to Unfold, A Parade of Cowards. I hope you'll go there and take a look. Now, the one site that I have done almost nothing with since the 23rd of last month, so it's been nearly 2 weeks, would be Sierra Madre Precious Metals. It's not that there probably hasn't been stuff to put up there, but I've been in a real funky place, folks. Real funky place. Having some battles with some doctors. Issues going on. I filed a complaint with a hospital about a particular issue. They've responded to me both in writing twice, in both direct mail and also in registered mail that I had to sign for. I could not sleep at all last night. I finally went to sleep at 5:30 this morning, which sucked because I had to get up at 6:30. I didn't get up. And because I'm going to respond to this letter, because they did not allow me to go far enough in my complaint on one emergency room hospital visit, and I'm going to take it further. But we've continued to handle clients, deal with issues, acquire product for clients. I'm going to do something I don't normally do on a Monday, because this just came up this afternoon and it's too good not to share with you. One of the problems we've been running into is this massive shortage of silver. Now, I have a supplier that has silver we can deliver. I can get you rolls of newly minted buffalo rounds. I can get some other mixed rolls of Moxnix mixed 1 ounce silver rounds. But I had a number of clients who were interested in silver, but I know both the clients extremely well. And both of them each own a considerable amount of silver. One of them is a good friend in Connecticut, and the other is a gentleman I've dealt with down in the Dallas area, down in Texas for many, many years. And as I explained to both of them, your problem is you've got too much silver. Thanks, man. You've got too much silver, and if you've got to get up and move, that's a massive amount of weight you're going to have to haul. Urgency, emergency situations. You don't necessarily have enough gold to stick in your pocket and be able to survive for 4, 5, 6 months. Some of the biggest suppliers in the country right now are talking to me about silver delivery in December. Well, I don't have to wait to December. I've got access to marginal amounts of rolls of silver. I received a phone call from one of our fellow broadcasters here at RBN today wanting to pick up some more silver, and I was able to take care of him. But then the question of gold came up, so I got a hold of my supplier. I want you to make a note of this, because this is really quite interesting, and don't kid yourself, prices could change in the morning. Spot gold at the time that I spoke with my supplier this afternoon and placed several orders was $1,842 an ounce, or thereabouts. I wanted to begin looking at some fractional gold pieces and decided to, because they don't do a lot in gold other than, you know, Krugerrands, Maple Leafs, American Eagles, etc., etc. So I began talking to my local supplier about quarter-ounce gold American Eagles. I was surprised when he told me he's got a fairly ample supply right now. Quarter-ounce. I don't want to buy one-ounce gold. I don't own one-ounce gold. I want something that's small, fractional, barterable, tradable, etc. So I start looking at the prices on these darn things with some of the biggest retailers around the country. And they're ranging between $607 and $618 each for a quarter-ounce American Gold Eagle. Well, I'll tell you what. If you have an interest, and I can't lock in tonight because they close at 5 o'clock, which is, you know, 30 minutes ago, 32 minutes ago. But if you have an interest in what I'm about to share with you, keep in mind we expect some little minor fluctuation of pricing by morning. Not the $607 and $618 price range. How about $571.42? That's a huge drop. That's almost $40 savings. But at the $571.42, I've got to put a minimum 12 coin order. That's going to get you 3 ounces. Okay? Minimum 12 coins. $571.42. So if all you ordered was 12, bang, including shipping, which is nominal, $6,872.04. That's it. If you can't afford a 12-pack, I'm not going to stop you from buying. Slight increase in price, but relatively minor. 4 coin minimum at $579.42 each. $579.42. Your shipping is going to be a flat $15. Don't worry. You're going to want to send me an email tonight. Send me a text if you can. If you've not texted me in the past and you're interested in the quarter-ounce gold American Eagles, no matter what the amount is, you want 40 of them, I guess I can get them. You want 4 of them? At this point, I know I can get them. Make sure I've got your first name when you send me an email. And let me know how many you want. And then, of course, I will verify in the morning before I lock anything in when I get my people on the phone. I mean, who knows? Maybe it drops down again. You save a few more bucks. 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. Don't call me when I'm on the air, but you can text me if you have an interest. I don't normally make offers of this type on a Monday. But then let's face it, I haven't been live on the air on a Monday in God knows how many months. But all this business going on with Uvalde and everything else has just got me so damned angry. And I just did not have the time to play around and pull an archival piece out tonight. I don't know. Maybe I had one ready to go. I forgot to send it on. I just don't know. Crazy times. At the opening of the show, I shared a quotation with you about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness having given way to permanent crisis management. That was a piece that was stated by David C. Unger, writing in The Emergency State, America's Pursuit of Absolute Security at All Costs. Now, friends, all we can do is suggest you meet your new dictator-in-chief. New York Times recently reported that newly disclosed documents have shed a crack of light on secret executive branch plans for apocalyptic scenarios, like the aftermath of a nuclear attack, when the president, God forbid with this guy, could activate wartime powers for national security emergencies. But you see, the problem is that we have become a nation in a permanent state of emergency. Power hungry and lawless, the government has weaponized one national crisis after another in order to expand its powers and justify all manners of government tyranny in the so-called name of national security. Seeds of this present madness, my friends, were sown almost two decades ago when George W. Bush stealthily issued two presidential directives that granted the president the power to unilaterally declare a national emergency, which is loosely defined as any incident, regardless of location, that results in extraordinary levels of mass casualties and damage or disruption severely affecting the U.S. population, the infrastructure, environment, economy, or government functions. End quote. No wonder recently we read that there was an attempt to take out George W. Bush, i.e. Shrub. Maybe somebody finally woke up. But comprising the country's continuity of government, or COG plan, C-O-G, these directives, National Security Presidential Directive 51 and Homeland Security Presidential Directive 20, provided a skeletal outline of the actions that the president would take in the event of a national emergency. Just what short of actions the president would take once he declares a national emergency can barely be discerned from the bare bones directives. And yet one thing is perfectly clear. In the event of a national emergency, the COG directives give unchecked executive, legislative, and judicial power to the president. My God. Can you imagine giving that kind of power to Biden? This country would then be subjected to martial law by default, and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights would be suspended. Essentially, the president would become a dictator for life. But then you see, it's already happened, hasn't it? Because we've witnessed in recent years that national emergency can take any form, can be manipulated for any purpose, can be used to justify any end goal, all on the say-so of the so-called president. The emergency powers that we know about, which presidents might claim during such states of emergency, are vast. And they range from imposing martial law, suspending habeas corpus, to shutting down all forms of communications, including implementing an internet kill switch and restricting travel, which means you would lose the ability to listen to all your favorite broadcasters each and every day and night. Now, that could mean one of two things. Either you're getting shut down or we are getting shut down to ensure that we can no longer transcribe. And yet, according to documents recently obtained by the Brennan Center, there may be many more secret powers that presidents may institute in times of so-called crises without oversight from Congress, the courts, or the public. All the more reason it's imperative that we maintain our Second Amendment rights. You remember the words of Junior Walker and the shotgun? Shoot them before they run now? You see, my friends, it doesn't matter what the nature of a crisis might be. Civil unrest, the national emergencies, unforeseen economic collapse, loss of functioning political and legal order, purposeful domestic resistance or insurgency, pervasive public health emergencies, and catastrophic natural and human disasters. As long as these things allow the government to justify all manners of government tyranny in the name of so-called national security, my God, the war on COVID, the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war on illegal immigration, all of these programs started out as responses to pressing national concerns and have since become weapons of compliance and control in the police state's hands. Deploying the same strategy it used with 9/11 to acquire greater powers under the USA Patriot Act, the police state, a.k.a. the shadow government, the deep state. All of this has been planning and preparing for such crises for years now, quietly assembling a wish list of presidential lockdown powers that could be trotted out and approved at a moment's notice. My God. Do you get it? Even the Trump administration even asked Congress to allow it to suspend parts of the Constitution whenever it deemed necessary during the COVID-19 crisis and other emergencies. And the Department of Justice went so far as to quietly trot out and test a long laundry list of terrifying powers that overrode the Constitution. We're talking about lockdown powers at both the federal and state level. The ability to suspend the Constitution, indefinitely detain American citizens, bypass the courts, quarantine entire communities or segments of the population, override the First Amendment by outlawing religious gatherings and assemblies of more than a few people, shut down entire industries and manipulate the economy, muzzle dissidents, stop and seize any plane, train, or automobile to stymie the spread of contagious disease. They can reshape financial markets, create a digital currency, and thus further restrict the use of cash. And even determine who should live or die. These are powers the police state would desperately like to make permanent. And my friends, in such a climate, the American president becomes dictator with permanent powers. Imperial, unaccountable, unconstitutional. But bear in mind that the powers the government officially asked Congress to recognize and authorize barely scratch the surface of the far-reaching powers the government has already unilaterally claimed for itself. Unofficially, mind you, the police state with the president at its helm has been riding roughshod over the rule of law for years now, with no pretense of being reined in or restricted in its power grabs by Congress, the courts, or the citizenry. And although the Constitution invests the president with very specific and limited powers, In recent years, American presidents have claimed the power to completely and almost unilaterally alter the landscape of this country for good or for ill. And the powers amassed by each consecutive successive president through the negligence of Congress and the courts, powers which add up to a toolbox of terror for an imperial ruler, empower whoever occupies the Oval Office to act as a dictator, above the law, beyond any real accountability. And as law professor William P. Marshall explained, every extraordinary use of power by one president expands the availability of executive branch power for use by future presidents. My friends, it doesn't even matter whether other presidents have chosen not to take advantage of any particular power, because it is a president's action in using power rather than forsaking its use that has the precedential significance. In other words, each successive president continues to add to his office's list of extraordinary orders and directives, expanding the reach and the power of the presidency, granting him or herself near dictatorial powers. All of the imperial powers amassed by Barack Obama and George W. Bush to kill American citizens without due process, to detain suspects indefinitely, to strip Americans of their citizenship rights, to carry out mass surveillance on Americans without probable cause, and to suspend laws during wartime, to disregard laws with which he might disagree, to conduct secret wars, convene secret courts, to sanction torture, sidestep the legislatures and the courts with excessive orders, and signing statements to direct the military to operate beyond the reach of the law, to operate a shadow government, to act as a dictator and a tyrant above the law and beyond any real accountability. All of these things were inherited by Donald Trump and passed along to Joe Biden. These presidential powers, my friends, acquired through the use of executive orders, decrees, memorandums, proclamations, national security directives, and legislative signing statements, and which can be activated by any sitting president, enable past president and future presidents to operate above the law and beyond the reach of the Constitution. Good God. These are the powers that continue to be passed along to each successive heir to the Oval Office. The Constitution be damned! This is what we call a stealthy, creeping, silent, slow motion coup d'etat. And from Clinton to Bush, Obama to Trump, now Biden, it's as though we've been caught in a time loop, forced to relive the same abuses over and over again, and the same assaults on our freedoms, and the same disregard for the rule of law, the same subservience to the deep state, and the same corrupt, self-serving government that exists only to amass power, enrich its shareholders, and ensure its continued domination. Now, friends, we've been losing our freedoms so incrementally for so long. Sold to us in the name of national security and global peace, maintained by way of martial law disguised as law and order, and enforced by a standing army of militarized police and a political elite determined to maintain their powers at all costs. But it's hard, it's difficult to pinpoint exactly when it all began going downhill. But we, the people, are paying the price for it now. We're paying the price every day that we allow the government to continue to wage its war on the American people, a war that is being fought on many fronts, with bullets and tasers, with surveillance cameras, license readers, intimidation and propaganda, court rulings, legislation, with the collusion of every bureaucrat who dances to the tune of corporate handouts while on the government's payroll. In other words, we the people's payroll. Most effectively of all, with the complicity of the American people, who continue to allow themselves to be easily manipulated by their politics and distracted by their pastimes and acclimated to a world in which government corruption is the norm. And unless something changes in the way we deal with these ongoing egregious abuses of power, the predators of the police state will continue to wreak havoc on our freedoms, our communities, and our lives. If we continue down this road, there can be no surprise about what awaits us at the end. Because, my friends, after all, it's a tale that has been told time and again throughout history about how easy it is for freedom to fall and tyranny to rise. And it often begins with one small, seemingly inconsequential willingness on the part of the people to comprise their principles and undermine the rule of law in exchange for a dubious assurance of safety, prosperity, and a life without care. But unfortunately, the process of unseating a dictator and limiting the powers of the presidency is far from simple, but at a minimum, it must start with we the people. We must recalibrate the balance of power. I talked to you about this many years ago. John Stadtmuller was on the air one day and threatened to shut the GD network down if people didn't contribute financially, etc., etc., etc. And the next day, he did not want to deal with the callers, so he decides to take the day off and asks me to fill in for him. And a gentleman calls in and says, well, I don't know what we're going to do if y'all shut that network down. I listen 12, 14, sometimes 16 hours a day. That's just the way the guy talked to me. And my response to him was, why? Why do you listen 14, 16 hours a day? Why don't you begin locally, in your own community, in your own home, in your schools, at your local city council meetings, in newspaper editorials, at protests, begin to push back against the laws that are unjust and the police departments that overreach, politicians that don't use it, don't listen to their constituents? Why do we tune in and listen that many hours a day instead of getting off of our assets and making a difference in those communities and waking people up? And don't tell me, because it doesn't make a damn bit of difference, because I can justify to you that it does. What we desperately need, my friends, is a concerted, collective commitment to the Constitution's principles of limited government, a system of checks and balances, a recognition that they, the president, the Congress, the courts, the military, the police, the techno rats and the pluto rats, and the bureau rats, answer and are accountable once again to we the people. And this will mean that Americans will have to stop letting their personal politics and party allegiances blind them to government misconduct and power grabs. It'll mean holding all three branches of government accountable to the Constitution. Vote them out of office if they abuse their powers, or get them removed from office. Because it's going to mean calling on Congress to put an end to the use of presidential executive orders and decrees, memorandums, proclamations, national security directives, and legislative signing statements as a means of getting around Congress, the courts, and we the people. In other words, we, you and I, have got to start making both the president and the police state play by the rules of the game. And the game is the Constitution.
We're all listening. The men of these long unconquered islands, farmers, city gents, laborers, miners,
I will see you tomorrow. Very special piece of music we're closing with tonight by Tom Jones. Oh, yeah, you remember Tom Jones. It says a lot about where I'm at, how I feel tonight. God bless you all, and I'll see you tomorrow.
I'm growing dimmer in the eyes. I'm growing fainter in my talk. I'm growing deeper in my sighs. I'm growing slower in my walk. I'm growing careless of my dress. I'm growing thrifty with my gold. I'm growing wise. I'm growing, yes, I'm growing old. I'm growing drowsy in my chair. And I no longer ponder life, though I don't save a lock of hair. I often dream about my wife. I'm growing fonder of the fire. I'm growing mindful of the cold. I'm growing wise. I'm growing, yes, I'm growing old. I'm growing, yes, I'm growing old. Yeah. Thank you.
The Biden administration created yet another new office. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. Dr. Richard Rachel Levine announced the creation of the Office of Environmental Justice within the Department of Health and Human Services. The new office will fall under the authority of HHS's Office of Climate Change and Health Equity, which was also established by the Biden administration. So the new office falls within another new office. At this point, it looks like Biden is just creating new offices for the sake of creating new offices. The Biden administration is all concerned about environmental equity while we the people are dealing with insane inflation and the pending collapse of the U.S. dollar. Biden's answer to everything: spend more money on woke progressive issues and ignore the real problem. And when that doesn't work, well, just blame the other side. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Cevis Pacem, Parabellum.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.